This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
What's up, podcast party people? Hello, welcome to another episode of Lead Singer Syndrome. I'm your host, Shane Told, as I take you through yet another episode of myself talking to another lead singer about what it's like being a lead singer in the studio, on the road, and everything else that goes along with the job. Today on the show, Mr. Ben Barlow of Neck Deep. You've probably seen the shirts. The fuck Neck Deep shirts or Neck Deep generic pop punk. You know, they really have this self-deprecating thing, which I don't know how much I like it because I actually really like the band. I think the band is awesome. I don't think they're generic at all. So we talk a little bit about that. We talk about this crazy amount of hype that they had, you know, being this new signing to Hopeless Records, how that felt. We talk about a whole bunch of things. We talk about football. We talk about just the whole idea of being a lead singer and the persona you're supposed to have. So this is a really, really interesting podcast. And I really love how you can have a conversation with somebody that's, you know, closer to my age. I'm in my mid-30s. Or you can talk to somebody in their early 20s. And a lot of the same things are going through our heads in different generations and different walks of life and different musical situations. So I really enjoyed this conversation. And I know you will too. Before we jump in, as always, I love for you guys to get in touch with me. If you've got a Snapchat, hit me up on there. I'm pretty active on Snapchat lately. I know it's like really stupid and lame, but man, I think it's just so much fun. And you can post stupid shit and it's gone in 24 hours. Like, who cares? So add me on Snapchat. It's Real Shane Told. Also for the show, we have a Twitter account, which is great to get at me. Just boom, 140 characters. Let me know what you think of the show. If you've got suggestions for future guests, whatever it is, that is at Lead Singer Syn, S-Y-N. We got an Instagram account, at Lead Singer Syndrome. And of course, if you want old-fashioned email, it's leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. And if you're one of the diehard Lead Singer Syndrome listeners, you're probably pissed at me because it's like 11 o'clock in the morning on Monday and I still haven't put the episode out yet. I hear from you guys, man. I've actually had a couple people hit me up on Twitter and be like, Shane, you know it's Monday. You didn't forget, did you? No, I never forget the day of the week. And I do take this show seriously and I try to get the episode out whenever I can. But, you know, I do live a busy life with Silverstein. I just got back from China, Japan, and Macau. I had so much fun, but man, I am so jet lagged. I feel like I've been jet lagged for like 2 months. So thanks for your patience. If you're one of those people that listens to the show like immediately when it gets put up, you guys are awesome. You are what keeps the wheels moving on this thing. And I have some news for you guys specifically. We are going to launch a VIP, whatever, fan club, whatever you want to call it. We're still working on a name. If you got a good name, let me know. I think I got a good one, but I don't want to spill the beans just yet. And not to worry, this podcast will always be free to listen to. But there are a bunch of diehards, and we want to service you guys. So we want to give you more. So for a low cost, you'll be able to join this program, which we're working on right now. And we're also going to have merchandise, and we're going to have all this stuff. And it really is cool, because I never knew the potential of this show. I just thought, hey, it's a cool idea. It's a lot of fun. And I've been enjoying it so much. So stay tuned for that, the Lead Singer Syndrome fan club, for lack of a better word at this point. For now, if you want to support the show, if you buy anything online, I know I say this every week, but it really does help keep the lights on around here. If you use Amazon, if you buy anything off Amazon at all, just use our affiliate link. It is leadsingersyndrome.com/Amazon. It'll take you right to the Amazon homepage. You log in as normal. You won't even know anything's different. But everything you buy, we'll get 4-6%, and it costs you absolutely nothing. So I know you guys hear this, and then you probably, oh shit, I'm on Amazon. Don't forget, because it really, really does make a difference. I mean, you buy something for $100-$200, that really is like the server cost for a week or whatever, and it really, really does help us. All right, no more babbling. Let's get to the episode with my new friend, Ben Barlow of Neck Deep.
Life is full of change. You grow up and then you feel Hi, Shane.
Hey, what's up?
How you doing?
Good.
Yeah, I got Ben here.
Nice.
I'll put you on to him and you can get started. He's still kind of waking up a bit, so.
Oh, yeah? I'll throw some water on him, dude. He'll be okay.
Yeah, I'll put him on right now. I think it's ironic. It's lead singer syndrome.
Oh, I know. I love shit, this kind of shit, man. Thanks, Ian.
No worries, man. I'll put him on.
Sure.
Hello.
Hey, dude.
Hey, man. How's it going?
Good. How are you? Still waking up?
Yeah, well, I've been up since like 6:30. I woke up to watch a football game, so I decided to like go back to sleep for an hour. So,
was it Man United?
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah,
I saw.
You know.
Yeah, no, I've seen pictures of you wearing the kit.
Yeah, man. Yeah. That's the thing out here. I got to wake up super fucking early to catch the game, so I haven't been as lazy as Newey's making it out.
Are you able to watch? Like, you guys have it on your bus, or do you just stream it?
Yeah, we're in a bandwagon, so we have like the cable. They have it's all on NBCSN now.
Oh shit! Okay.
Yeah, like all the Premier League games pretty much are on there, so that's pretty sick.
Well, yeah, I mean, also, I guess you're lucky that you support a team that's very popular.
Yeah. Especially, like, around the world. United are just, like, that's kind of their thing, is that, like, around the world, they're the team, so.
How did you, I mean, because you're from Wales, right?
Yeah.
So how did you become a supporter of a team that's, you know, way up there?
Well, it's like our nearest big city, like either there or Liverpool.
Oh,
everyone
yeah.
from where I'm from is either a Liverpool or a United fan, with like a few other teams scattered around there. Because like we're about 10 minutes away from the border of England. Mm. So like there's like a big rivalry almost type thing with the England-Wales thing. But yeah, everybody supports English teams just because... Yeah, our hometown team like suck. So
that's the
Pretty
truth.
Much.
Yeah, no,
yeah,
I,
yeah.
I always think it's like weird. Yeah, our tour manager's from, I guess he's from Cornwall originally, and
okay.
he lives in Brighton now, and he's a Man U fan too.
Oh,
so
okay.
I guess
yeah,
it's
that's
like
a little bit weirder. That's like even further away. I'm
yeah.
only an hour away from Manchester. He's
right,
like, but London has like a bunch of fucking like Man U fans. I don't know why. They're just a big team.
Yeah, it happens. I mean, like here, like you know, I'm a baseball fan, so.
Yeah.
There's like New York Yankees fans and Boston Red Sox fans like fucking everywhere.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
it doesn't
yeah.
even matter. It's like someone's parents or something, you know.
Yeah, that's pretty much how it is. Like, so, like that's how I got onto it. It was basically my brother was like the first person to hand me any form of like jersey, and it was
yeah.
a United jersey. So I was just like, cool. I guess
yeah.
this is who I support now.
Yeah, I was like a huge fan of the Charlotte Hornets, like NBA team, when I was a kid. The
okay.
only reason I was because like. I had a shirt of the team. I don't know if you know where I got it.
Yeah.
And it was just
yeah,
like a
no.
cool logo. And I was like, okay, I like this team. And then, you know, it's like funny how that happens, like for no real reason.
Yeah, yeah. That was pretty much it for me. Like, yeah, like just super young. Didn't know who it was. No like prior kind of like, you know, like judgment towards anything. They probably didn't even like football at the time.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, just like, oh, cool. Yeah, I guess this is it. And then I think, like, my best friend at the time supported him, too. So it's kind of just, like, got into it together. And
yep.
Yeah,
it's
great, though. I do love it. Do love a good bit of soccer ball.
There you go. Yeah, we call it soccer. No, yeah, and now, as an adult, you can probably get stabbed for wearing that in the wrong place. So, great. Congratulations.
Thanks, man.
Dude, so, yeah, man, waking up, fuck, like, waking up in the morning that early... That can't be good for your voice.
No, that's kind of why I like almost wanted to go back to sleep so I could have like a little bit of rest time.
Yeah.
Like a little extra rest in before. But well, we're not playing for a little while now too, so I've still got a while to rest. But yeah, early mornings are not well, I guess that's kind of also the you know, the upside to me always waking up late is that I get to rest my voice, but the real reason is just because I'm a fucking terrible sleeper and I'm usually up till 6 a.m. myself anyway.
Yeah.
So
no, like I'm always the last one to bed, like on, you know, on tour on the bus, like always. I don't know
yeah.
why. I don't know what it is. And I've talked to other singers and
I don't know. I think it must. Yeah. I think it's kind of like maybe again, like being a singer, I think a lot of singers tend to be quite introverted despite the fact that they're quite extroverted as well, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, because I think as a lyricist, you have to be pretty introverted if I know some vocalists don't necessarily write their lyrics. Some other members in the band might write them for them, but that usually means that, you know, if you're introverted and all that sort of thing, you're usually thinking a lot. So being up that late, kind of last one to bed, I think it suits the vocalist stereotype, you know.
Yeah,
always thinking kind of thing.
Definitely. So you write the lyrics in your band like 100%?
Yeah, pretty much. I've written like 99.9% of the lyrics for Neck Deep, like bar maybe one or two lines here or there that somebody has kind of just like, you know, thrown an idea at me for, right, or something like that. Like, but yeah, pretty much all of them. I'd say that's probably my stronger hand is my lyrics.
Oh yeah, you think that's one of your strengths? That's interesting, yeah, man. Because I'll tell you, like, you know, you guys are still a young band. You're like what, 22?
I'm 22. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like funny because I mean, when I was younger, like your age, I fucking hated writing lyrics, dude, and I didn't think I was good at it. And it actually took me a long time to kind of feel like comfortable and like, you know, write something. And I was like, yeah, like, yeah, I kind of like this.
Cool.
Like, for me, my strength was always like writing melodies and like as a musician, like as a, you know, like guitar player. So
yeah,
I always hated writing lyrics until like maybe the last, like, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, I'd say.
Oh, okay. No, I've always thought it's been my strong point. Like as a, even kind of as a school student and stuff, like I was always like pretty bad at like maths and science and stuff. Like that stuff never really, like, I mean, I did okay in it, but it never really gripped me, whereas, like, English and stuff is where I was, like, real good, and, like, that was where all my good grades came from, was, like, English and writing and drama and things like that. Like, I don't know, I think I just had a thing for words, bit of a wordy guy, so.
Yeah, the artistic side, I get it. I mean, that's the way it's supposed to be with, you know, us artists, you know, we're supposed to be all... Oh yeah, man. No, just like it's cool and like not know anything about business and just, you know, be that tortured artist.
That is almost me. Yeah, I'm probably guilty for that as far as like our band goes. Like when it comes to like the business side of things, like I just don't really pay much attention. Like I'll chip in here and there. It's more the things that I'll chip in on if it affects the way that like how our band might come across, or if it's kind of like a almost like an imagey kind of thing, like say it's a merch design or something, like,
right,
that's when I'll pipe up. Like as far as when it comes down to like the numbers and the figures and all that shit, I'm just like, I don't care.
Yeah, so you're even like somehow artistic about the business side, like anything business, you're like, it still has to, it's like artistic that you care about. That's really funny.
Yeah.
Let's talk about your merch. Let's talk about your merch because we've never met before. I've never spoken to you. It's our first time meeting. And I've always like wondered about you guys being with this, like, okay, Neck Deep. Like you got the generic pop punk shirts, or like I saw one recently that's like, fuck Neck Deep, their shit,
the
mate.
Shit. Yeah.
You know? And then I was watching, you know, poking around the internet, watching some YouTube video, and you're like, yeah, like our shit band. You know, what like, is that? And what is this self-deprecating thing that you're doing?
I think it's more just like, I think it's a lot of like, maybe a British thing, a slightly British thing, but also a case of like, we, you know, like I would say like we were one of the first bands of this like new generation to like get like a lot of attention really quickly, and I think for that reason a lot of people kind of wrote us off, didn't think we were legit, thought that we were like a bunch of fucking posers or whatever. And it was like, well, no, you know, things are different, and like we have worked our ass off and we're at where we're at. But it was always just kind of a dig at that as well, like, oh, people always write us off and think that we suck just because we're this new band, you know, or we're this new band that everyone was like this hype band or whatever. So it was kind of like that. It was kind of a little dig at that. Like, oh, let's, okay, if we also kind of say like, yeah, we suck, we're shit, like we don't care, then, you know, what can people throw at us? Like nothing really. So yeah, it was more of a, it's more of just, and as well, we're not afraid to like take the piss out of ourselves. We're real. We're not standing here acting like we're the sickest band of all time. Like we're not sitting here acting like we're this crazy, like deep, really meaningful, like, yeah, like we're really take ourselves seriously kind of band. Like, no, we don't take ourselves seriously. We know that like,
you know, it is just pop punk. It's not the most complex and like,
right.
intricate music. So whatever, like it's almost part of like the whole like attitude, I guess, that goes along with it is of just, yeah, like don't take yourself seriously. Just sure. Whatever, make fun of yourself. It's fine. Like, you know, and as well, I think it's just a real thing as well. You know, if you can laugh at yourself, other people can kind of connect you a little bit more, I guess. Maybe they think, oh, right, okay, if they can laugh at themselves, they obviously don't take themselves so seriously. Maybe they're a little bit more approachable. Maybe they're a bit more down-to-earth kind of guys.
Totally. Well, I also think part of it is you're saying it before someone else has the chance to say it to you first. Do you know what I mean?
I think there's probably
a little bit of a defense mechanism in there too. I don't know if you'll admit to that or not.
A little bit, yeah, probably. Like not in like a reactory way, if you know what I mean. Not in, like, mm-hmm. It's not like we're reacting to things like that, but it's more just a case of like, yeah, we're aware of it. So like, haha, said it first, like
sure.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
But I also think that part of that probably comes from, like you said, you know, you guys having so much hype so quickly, people being like, who the fuck is this band, Neck Deep? What does that name even mean? You know, people right away just coming out with like, what? Who is this band? You know, I totally understand, you know, where that's coming from. And you guys being so young and having so much success, like, I mean, we're talking about like in the first 6 months of your band.
Yeah.
Like, you know, putting anything out, you guys are already blowing up. Was that hard for you guys to kind of understand? Did you guys feel like you were deserving of it, or did you feel like you're kind of pulling the wool over people's eyes early on?
I'm not sure. Like, it's like, as far as I'm concerned, the only other musical thing that I did was I just played acoustic and played like shitty local shows and like busked. And then, like, a bunch of the other guys in our band had always been in other bands and had toured Europe and toured the UK, and it always ended up just being shit and always losing a bunch of money. So, like, in that sense, like, I guess, like, we've experienced what it's like to, like, see that shitty side of music.
Right.
Maybe not to the same extent as, like, some other people get to see it, but, like, that shit side of touring, of, like, playing to fucking nobody and, you know, sleeping in a van and just being completely broke. Like, yeah, we've experienced, I personally haven't, but there's guys in our band that have experienced that.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, it was kind of weird, you know, like none of us were expecting it. It's not like we set out to be like, hey, let's just become super, like this super huge band. It was just like, hey, let's write a couple of songs. And I don't know how or why it kind of took off so quickly, but it kind of just did. And yeah, I guess for like the first year, it almost felt like we had to constantly justify ourselves. Like, yo, fucking, you know, all right, like, hey, why, you know, even though we had a lot of fans, I think it mainly came from like other bands that didn't think we were legit. It was like more of a, like an in, like a, an inner circle kind of thing. And that it, we weren't like really accepted straight away, and it was kind of like, these guys must be, I don't know, these guys must not be legit if they've kind of had it all handed to them. But we kind of put ourselves through a lot of shit the first early stages of the band. Like the first few tours we did like were not good by any means. Like we toured with shitty bands and played shitty shows, and
yeah, well, I mean, you gotta start somewhere, like, and you gotta you know,
yeah,
put yourself on the,
like,
map, you know, get yourself in front of people.
Yeah, we didn't skip that phase, you know.
No.
Like, we still did the same kind of, the same shit as any other band would. Like, yeah, I don't know. I think we just tried to do as best as we could with what we had. Like, we knew that, okay, people are paying attention right now. It's all eyes on us, but, you know.
It took a bit of time, too. I mean, it wasn't overnight success, like, by any means. I remember hearing about you guys because, you know, we were on Hopeless Records, and Eric, you know, Eric Tobin, who runs the label,
him telling me
he was, you know, he signed you guys and that you guys were, you know, going to be this huge thing. And I was like, okay, like, you know, and it was like everybody kept saying Neck Deep is going to be huge. Neck Deep is going to be huge. And then it took a little longer, I think, than you guys all thought. And it wasn't until, I'd say, really your second album.
When people really started to be like,
okay, yeah, this band is for real.
About, yeah, that's what I mean. Like, I think
well, yeah, if you, like, I feel like there was probably a lot of pressure on us at that point as well. If you say, if you can say, like, by when we were writing that first record, and that first record, in my opinion, is one of, it's fine, it's okay, it's a record, you know, like, it's okay. Yeah, there was a lot of pressure, especially writing that record, because it was our first record. It was like on a fucking, you know, it was on a label, and it was all this stuff, and, you know, everyone had such, like, high expectations of it, and it did well, like, you know what I mean? Like, people still love songs off that record. We still play songs off that record. It's not like the record that we ignore, you know? So, yeah, around about that first record time, I think it was quite a lot of pressure on us in terms of, like, we had a position to almost try and solidify. And at that point, we'd only been a band for like a year, and maybe two years, and it was not even that long, like a year and a bit, maybe approaching 2 years. And that was a lot to take on, you know. At that point, we'd already toured America a couple of times, and like fucking, yeah, had like EPs and albums under our belt, and like, it was just fucked, like, it was crazy, and like, we had to learn to get good, like, because that was one thing as well, we fucking sucked live for like the first 2 years of being in a band, like, we were bad live, like, I really had to learn how to sing, like, I had sung to myself in my bedroom, and that was fine, and then going on tour, though, and singing every night for half an hour straight, especially when you don't know how to sing at first, is... That was like something I had to get used to. And
well, what people don't understand is that when you go, you know, you can sing in your bedroom or your shower or whatever, and there's like kids out there that can sing pretty well. And then they don't realize, like, when you get up there onto a stage and there's a loud ass, you know, guitar, bass, drums right behind you, and you're at like some shitty 150 cap room, the monitors aren't good. You can't hear anything. You know, and I really like, you know, I don't think people understand how difficult it is.
Yeah. And you have to like overcompensate like so much for it. And like a lot of the time, I think as well, like I still even do it now a little bit. Like I think over the last like year, my voice has gotten exponentially better. Like a bad day for me now would have been like my best day ever a couple of years ago. But I like sometimes I do it now, like because we've been playing like these small like one-off shows recently, just like on off day. Like we've got one today, and we've been booking them in like purposely smaller rooms, like no barrier, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
In those kind of scenarios, you get so into the crowd and trying to put on a show that you almost like let technique slip away a little bit. And I feel like that fucks me up sometimes, especially if it's a show that I'm like super into. I forget like a lot of technique and just like kind of just end up like fucking my voice up. And especially if there's like a part where it's like a little bit of screaming or something,
right?
Or like some slightly more aggressive parts in it, I'll just let the technique slip and just like, oh, I know as soon as I do it, like, oh fuck, I've ragged my voice a little bit there.
No, totally. I mean,
take it easy for the rest of the set now. So
yeah, well, I mean, you guys were, you know, you won the APMA award for best live band, you know, and
yeah, that's kind of fucking. I mean, that's cool. Like, yeah, thanks for giving us best live band. Appreciate it, but like, man, there's better live bands out there.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, it's. I'm not gonna say you're not a good live band. You know, I've seen you guys. I think you guys are a good live band for sure. But for you guys to already this short in your career, like most bands, it takes fucking years. Like,
that's,
I mean, you guys
I mean,
are out
yeah.
with what, Pierce the Veil right now, right?
Yeah.
That's a live band. And we toured with Pierce the Veil back in like 2007. And like, they weren't good then. They were fine. Like, don't get me wrong. They were like, Vic can fucking sing, always could. But the way they have their show together now, like, they're incredible.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
and
it, is, like,
it just takes time.
Yeah, like, you know, like, so we've been a band for just over, like, 5 years now. And sometimes, like, it takes a band 5 years to even break out and, you know, get people. Sometimes bands are playing music for 5, 6, 7 years before they get any sort of recognition. I mean,
true.
That's a long time. But or even maybe 3, 4 years, you know. Like, they're playing music for a while, and they're playing shows for a while, and they're writing music for a while. It was like, for us, it was literally like, oh, first EP, sick, get out on tour. Like, you know, it was kind of like thrown in at the deep end. Like, we didn't play a local show for a little while, but I think that benefited us because our local scene kind of needed a kick up the ass. And so it was like, hey, we're not going to play because, like,
the promoters around here suck ass, and yeah, and it sucks dick around here. So it would be better if we got out and, you know, like instantly we were thrown into the deep end though, and it wasn't like we had a lot of practice and a lot of like build up and a lot of like honing our skills. It was just like, there you go, you've got an EP, like, there you go. So,
well,
crazy.
We talk about on this podcast, we say fake it till you make it all the time, and that's a common theme that a lot of bands and a lot of singers have to do, because like you said, you get thrown into the deep end and you have to learn to swim.
Yeah, and I think it's more a case of like, yeah, the first year or two is definitely just winging it, completely winging it, just like, yeah. What the fuck, like, hey, you know, you've never really had any attention on you whatsoever anyway, like, you are just normal guy facing the crowd, everyday person. Now here's an interview for like this big magazine wants to interview. Like, I've never been interviewed before unless it was for a job. Like, I don't know how to do this. You kind of just have to realize what it is and what it is like that you need to say, and like,
yeah,
you know, or like, and I don't know, I guess that's kind of another thing that vocalists kind of struggle with, is almost like creating this persona, because I feel like there's being a front man and there's being a vocalist, you know, and like, I don't know, I don't know which category I'd fall into, because I don't feel like I have like this crazy extroverted personality, like, I don't know, like say like an Ollie Sykes would have. Like, I'm not that kind of guy. Like, I'm not the kind of guy who's gonna go and fucking smash a load of drugs and like create this big fucking scene and like have this huge like allure to me as this, as like a personality, I guess. Right. That's just how I am, you know.
But then Ollie Sykes is kind of introverted when he's not on stage too, you know. He's kind of like a subdued kind of guy too, you know.
Yeah,
so it is interesting, man, that whole dynamic of you, when you're on stage, you're expected to be this extroverted crazy guy, and then if you do that when you're not on stage, you're an asshole.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. And like, yeah, it's trying to find that balance between like, I don't know, dude, like, my thing, at least my, like, I don't know, if I had to say it was a thing, like, I am a bit of a fucking introvert. Like, I don't go crazy on social media, I don't go, like, you know, I don't go asking for a bunch of shit, I don't go, like, I do kind of keep myself to myself, and I think maybe that's part of my thing, is maybe just being a little bit mysterious, I guess.
Right.
Like, being the more subdued kind of vocalist guy, like, who doesn't want all this attention. But then I don't know if that's to my detriment or not, because everyone expects the front guy, like, the front man to have all of the fucking attention and, like, to want all of the attention and to control all of the attention, but I don't think that's me. I don't really want to control all
the
attention.
Well, it's really changed, man, like, the way that stuff is perceived, you know? Like, nowadays with, like you said, social media, everybody's got a Twitter account. You know, people at any time of day can post a picture of themselves hanging out, whatever, doing something. Like, you know, back in the 80s,
yeah,
or the 90s even, for that matter, like, all those huge bands, they were all mysterious. They all had mysterious personalities. People, there was so much misinformation about, like, you know, oh, you know, Kurt Cobain's this way, or Axl Rose is this, done this crazy,
yeah,
shit. But there was no, like, humanizing them, you know?
Yeah,
whereas it's like some singer in a band, like, posts a picture of him, like, walking in the park with his daughter, and you're like, oh, he's, like, just like a normal guy.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's definitely something that I've had to kind of, like, come to terms with, is, like, not that I want to be seen as this, like, mysterious, like, ooh, crazy, like, ooh, he's, you know, this real different, deep guy. It's just, like, I don't really want the fucking world knowing every little detail about my life, which I feel like, some people maybe do a little bit too much, and they go,
yeah,
a little bit, like, social media is great, like, don't get me wrong, I have a Twitter account, I have an Instagram account, and, you know, whatever, but I don't want everybody knowing every intricate detail of my fucking life. And I look back at people, like, the pre social media era, and it was like the only times you would get to see glimpses of your favorite bands would be from like interviews or, you know, like tour documentaries or things like that.
Yeah.
And it gave them this kind of like this aura about them that was like,
absolutely,
yeah, this special like character that I, you know. And then when you go to see them live, seeing them live in
person, like, oh my God, that this happens at every show I go to, every show that I go to that's like a big kind of like legendary band. And I think everyone does it. Everyone looks at the stage and goes, holy fuck, that's Dave Grohl
right
there. You know right. what I mean? Oh, holy shit, that's like the Red Hot Chili Peppers, like right there, like 100 meters away from me or something like that. And it was that allure in the first place that made me like fall in love with bands like Blink. Like, but then again, I think Blink did it slightly differently. I think Blink were halfway between the era of like,
oh yeah,
yeah, like Nirvana and stuff. And
absolutely,
and
because
this era, because they still put out like tons of tour documentaries and they were still really active in promoting their own personalities.
Absolutely,
and you know, like they put their personalities out there big time. So
absolutely, and Green Day too was like that too. Those two bands for sure. You know, but there are still some instances, you know, of today's bands. Like the one guy I can think of is like Jesse Lacey of Brand New, who is still very mysterious. Like, I don't know if he has social media. He might. I don't, you know, they're such a mysterious band, you know, and no one really knows kind of what they're up to or what they're thinking. And I think that gives them a certain allure and a certain coolness, you know, with they're the band that can basically do no wrong.
So I don't know if it's I don't know if that's what I've been intentionally going for, though. I think it was more just a case of like, I don't really want people to know like everything about me, you know what I mean? Like, I don't want people, like, I post about like me and my girlfriend every now and again, but I don't really like writing songs about our current relationship at least too in depth, because I don't want people to know what my relationship is like. You know what I mean? I don't want people to know like what's going on in my life. I just want to be someone that writes music and plays shows, and that's pretty much it.
So like, when you write lyrics, are you trying to be vague sometimes because there's some fear of maybe somebody figuring you out? Is that ever come into your head now that you know like literally millions of people are going to hear these songs?
I don't know if it's like trying to be vague. I don't think it's trying to be vague, but I know that there's a line when writing lyrics that it's like, that's too real. Like, that's too much. That's like too, it's too literal. It's too real. Mm-hmm. It's too, yeah. So sometimes I don't know if it's like trying to not be too vague, but sometimes I think like if you're being super literal and super like, this is what happened, or like this is, or you know, or like this is exactly how it is, it can sometimes sound like a bit cheesy, a bit corny, but like, you know what I mean? It's a bit cheap to me. I feel like if you, you know, having that poetic license and being able to, you know, kind of put things into metaphors or whatever, like, I feel like that just makes a better lyricist kind of thing. Like,
I totally get it. I mean,
but like, but then again, some of the best lyricists are like really literal. It depends on style. Like, truly, it is down to style. And I think my lyrical style is a little bit of a mix. But I would say generally tends to be, yeah, not so literal, not so like, yeah, this is how it is.
No, there's you're right. And there's some guys that can pull it off. Like, you know, when I think of one of the greatest lyricists ever is like Morrissey. And you know, like,
that's super literal. Yeah,
so
super,
like the one thing I read about him once.
Make a song out of a 30-second scene. You know, like,
yeah. You know, he has no fear. You know, he'll use vocabulary and words and stuff that like I just don't think I could pull off.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Like, I read Morrissey lyrics from time to time and just think like, how do you fucking think of this? Even like, but his melodies are super weird too. Like, that was the thing, like, as a youngster, like, a little bit younger, maybe, like, a teen, like, an early teenager, a lot of my friends listened to, like, The Smiths, and they were all big indie heads, and really loved indie, and Morrissey and The Smiths weren't catchy enough for me back then.
Right.
I don't know why, it didn't get me, his melodies weren't catchy enough, they were always sometimes a bit too weird, but then as I kind of got a bit more mature and started, like, seeing the world for, you know, through slightly more experienced eyes, that I kind of was like, oh, okay, like I get what Morrissey's kind of talking about here. Or like, you just, you know, as you get older, your views on things change and your taste changes a little bit here and there. And yeah, so when I was kind of like in my later teens, I guess I started seeing like, oh right, okay, yeah, Morrissey's sick. But it was more his lyrical content that
that got me. Just like, yeah, how do you talk about that shit? Like how do you work that into a song? And but that's inspiring. And like another lyricist that I, who again baffles my mind and is almost on the other end of the scale, is where sometimes you don't have a fucking clue what he's talking about, is Anthony Kiedis from the Chili Peppers. Like,
right,
what the fuck are his lyrics?
Like, yeah, some, there's a lot of babbling drug references, I think.
Yeah, that's kind of, yeah, that's, I've read up on it recently because, like, well, me and my girl are just huge Chili Peppers fans, and we'd be singing along, and she would sing a different lyric to me, and I'd be like, no, it says this, and she'd be like, no, it says this, and I'm like, no, it says this. So we'd look up the lyrics and then be like, oh, okay, so it does say that, but what the fuck does this mean? And then, yeah, they tend to just be drug references or songs about his ex-girlfriends, mostly.
Yeah.
But he does it in such a way that is, yeah, like, really almost hard to decode sometimes. Like,
well, he's, yeah, and the guy's definitely
flip-flop going into a bridge is sick. Just yelling flip-flop. Sick. if you can get away with doing that, that's sick.
Yeah, well, that guy's seen some shit, so, you know, I think that helps. But, yeah. Well, you talk about, you know, your early life a little bit. Can we jump back? Because I don't know how much you've done podcasts. You know, having a nice long format is great to kind of, you know, for people to listen to and kind of understand, you know, what makes you tick. And so I know you grew up in Wales.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Wales had kind of a crazy music scene back you know, when you were younger. And I'm kind of wondering if you were aware of that music scene and if it inspired you at all, and just how you kind of got into punk rock.
Yeah, very, very aware of it. When I was, well, my roots, I have my older brothers to like fully thank for everything. You know, like I put it in perspective for a lot of people. Sometimes people try and grill me on my musical
knowledge.
Yeah, and
is this Seb you're talking about?
Seb, so I have two brothers.
Yep.
So Seb is my older brother, but he's only older than me by like 2 years, 2-3 years.
Yep.
And we were always really close. He's like genuinely one of my best friends. But then there's like quite a big age gap between Seb and my older brother, who was like the wise man who would like show me and Seb all this cool music and would be like, hey, listen to Green Day. Hey, I've got green hair and I listen to Bad Religion and I skate.
Right.
And it's like, it was just this older influence that kind of, yeah, who kind of just pointed us in the right direction. So like, he was huge into grunge and punk, and his favorite bands were like Pearl Jam and Bad Religion. And he always had fucking green, crazy hair, and he was always skating, and he was always going to shows, and just this huge punk. And, yeah, like me and my brother just, I like never questioned it. We're always just like, yeah, he's cool. Like, we love our brother. Like, he shows us cool stuff. He takes us skateboarding. Like, he shows us good music. And so, you know, like when people grill me on my musical knowledge, I'm like, let me put it in perspective. I was fucking like 7 years old when Take Off Your Pants and Jacket came off. Most people were like, oh, I was like 16, 17. You know, I was in the peak of my like musical discovery phase. I was like, I was young, dude. Like, so sometimes people try and grill me on that shit. And I'm like,
actually,
how old?
I was in college when that record came out.
Oh yeah, that's what I mean. Like, I was way younger. I was way, way younger, and I was just heavily influenced by my brothers. So yeah.
So but, what was the transition from, you know, being thinking your brother was cool skateboarding to like actually being like, hey, I'm gonna pick up a guitar, I'm gonna like, you know, start a band?
That was when, see, this is where Seb becomes an influence to me now. Is like when I saw Seb joining bands and shit. That's when I started going, oh, sick, like, band world, you know what I mean? Like, ooh, like, going to shows with Seb and, like, seeing Seb play shows and, like, seeing how a show goes and, like, seeing what band practice is like. And, like, even my first experience of, like, I remember when Seb came back from recording, like, an EP with him, and I was like, what was it? What's recording like? Like, what's that like? You know what I mean? That's when it... So he was probably about 13, 14, 15-ish, like just teenager. And I was maybe like 11, 12, and then like into my teens. So like that preteen, like in the UK, at least like just starting high school.
Yeah.
That's when I was kind of like, oh, cool. Like I'm going to maybe pick up a guitar, or, you know, I'm going to start going to shows more regularly. And, you know, that's when I started making friends who were into the similar sort of music as me. In school, I didn't really have anyone who liked the same sort of music as me. Yeah, it was just a small town, and everyone was just kind of into, like, hip-hop or, like, shit charm music, really. So it was me and, like, a couple of other guys in school who were into Blink, and that was pretty much it, really. All of my musical, like, my musical side of things was shared with my brother and probably mostly his friends, I would say, actually, so...
Right. Well, I mean, with the local scene, I mean, in Wales, you know, the bands that were big at the time, like I think of, you know, Funeral for a Friend.
Yeah.
I think of Lost Prophets. I think of The Blackout. They're all Welsh bands, right?
Yeah, they were I'd say they were the three the big ones that kind of broke out. That was huge. I remember Lost Prophets, like Shinobi versus Dragon Ninja, coming out when I was like super, super young. I remember having this sticker at a local skate park and like trying to get this sticker to the top of this huge ramp. Like, fuck, I gotta get that up there. But like, yeah.
I hope you didn't get it. I hope that Lost Prophet sticker isn't up there anymore.
I think that skate park isn't there anymore.
Oh,
but I remember,
well, perfect.
This is when it was fine to light Lost Prophets. Yeah, this is when it was a good thing to light Lost Prophets. But
I didn't want to mention them, but like, you know, they were an important band back then. Yeah,
they were for a minute. They were, and but you know, that was, everyone was fully aware of it and was fully onto those bands, and like, especially like bands like Funeral, because Funeral, I feel like, maybe came a little bit after Lost Prophets, more around the time of the Blackout. But Funeral were great. Like, Funeral broke out in the US, which is, you know, to an extent, which is something that you don't really hear about. And people sometimes, I think, forget nowadays that, like, yeah, Funeral fully made it out here and like did plenty of touring out here. And but that was really important to like the Welsh scene, I would say. I would say like a lot of people's favorite band for a long time was Funeral. You can ask so many people and they'll say Funeral's my favorite band. It did inspire, and that sound, almost that Funeral kind of like raw, half like post-hardcore emo-y, but also kind of like punky and rocky, kind of like, I don't know, it was a strange kind of sound coming out of the UK at that time. There was also a band at the time coming out of the UK called 100 Reasons, who were like this weird like indie rock but kind of punky band. Like, it was it seemed like these bands always had like a few genres in there. It was great though. Like, that era of UK music was really sick. Like, obviously the UK has always been a huge musical export place. I think that's why, you know, if we didn't have some of the music that we've brought out in the past couple of decades, then people would write the UK off. But as far as music goes and exporting, like, yeah, like,
no, I think, UK, I mean, like, per capita, I think the UK probably has the most successful bands. I don't know. I don't know if that's a statistic or not, but I think I read something.
How small we are,
right?
Like, it's crazy. Yeah,
right.
Like,
it is totally
crazy how many good bands come out from how small we are. But yeah, bands like Funeral. I'm trying to think who else would have been like at the time as well. Like, maybe like a little bit after Funeral. After that, I would say like maybe Enter Shikari for a while, and like Bring the Horizon. Like, when they were first starting out, they were influential bands. Like, probably almost getting on 10 years now, like,
yeah,
for about 10 years ago, maybe they were influential bands because they were the young hype bands of that time, you know. And Enter Shikari had like two EPs out or something like that, and everyone, they would be selling out venues across the UK. Same with Bring Me, like, it's always been this good, steady progression. And at that time, like, our local music scene was great because we had Bring Me coming through, we had Enter Shikari coming through, we had a bunch of heavy bands coming through. We had, I think you guys might have even rolled through a couple of times.
Yeah, absolutely.
Through Wrexham Central Station.
Absolutely, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. We had a big fest one year that was called Taste of Chaos, and it was like Suicide Silence, Bring Me the Horizon, some obscure, like, death and grindcore bands. Like, but that was sick, and I think, like, for some reason, it died out where we were from for a little bit. Like, I think the promoter started, I think he fell out with the venue he worked at.
Okay.
And, like, maybe moved on to, I think he started promoting in the town over. And
right.
Just slowly the music scene started dying. Like, a lot of the bands that were starting just didn't do anything and just didn't want to be bands anymore.
Well, that's what you said. You said, you know, that your local scene was shit and that you didn't really... You didn't really see a need, you know, to be a local band at that time. And you know, nowadays, you said you've played more stuff locally in Wales and stuff. But so that was that kind of the motivation, that and seeing other bands break out overseas and stuff, that you were like, you know, we can do this?
Yeah, I think, well, we never thought that we would break out overseas. Like, that was a complete, like, left field, like, had no idea that would happen. But, like, yeah, it was definitely, like, the not playing local shows, I think, was definitely kind of a fuck you to the dying music scene. Like, the music scene that had kind of let itself die. Like,
yeah.
Almost like a, well, you know, like, you're not supporting us anymore. Like, if we played local shows, what the fuck, you know, you're going to probably, I don't know, it'd be shit. They'd probably fuck us over. They'd probably make us play some terrible, terrible support slots. And, you know, this is the kind of promoter that would make my brother go and sell tickets for the shows.
Pay
and
to
would
play be like, shit,
yeah, and maybe give him and literally pay him like £5, pay the band £5 after playing like a shitty support show. Like, pff, yeah, that sucked. Oh, I remember my brother played a show with this Scottish band called Flood of Red, who are fucking sick. I love Flood of Red. And the old, you know... Confide.
Yeah.
You remember the band Confide? Yep. You know, Ross Kenyon. He was in a band called Penknife Love Life. And they pulled out, and Flood of Red still played, and my brother's band supported. And I remember, like, it was going to be, like, the sickest show ever. Like, Penknife Love Life, Flood of Red. And, like, 10 people showed up. And it was
Yeah,
and he had to sell tickets for that. And his band literally got paid £1 each. So,
well, you can get a 99p Greg sandwich, so that's great.
Yeah, that was perfect. Literally what it was. Yeah,
perfect, so. Man. Well, I mean, you guys have obviously, like, you know, come a long way from the local scene days, and you know, you're on tour with Pierce the Veil now. What, like, was kind of struck me about you guys is not only did you guys get this sort of, you know, very, like, a lot of hype early on and a lot of success early on, but also kind of a lot of love from sort of some big names. You know, I mean, you know, you guys having Mark Hoppus, Chris Carrabba, both doing features.
Yeah, the Mark Hoppus thing still fucking blows my mind.
And then, you know, Jeremy from A Day to Remember producing your record. Like, how did this all come about? And were you guys just like, you know, going back to the, you know, fuck neck deep, their shitmate, you know, kind of thing. Like, were you surprised that you guys... these people were really taking you, like, kind of under their wing?
Yeah, definitely, 100%. Like, the way that, like, the Mark thing happened was basically we found out that he liked us, and he kind of tweeted about us a few times, and then we were just cheeky as fuck, and we're basically like, hey, we know you like us, like, you know what I mean? Like, kind of pestered him almost, like, annoying little fucking kids, just like, hey, Mark, like, you know, and we played that one show with him, in London, and, like, we got to meet him then, and I think, like, he genuinely likes us, I think Mark does, like, so.
Sure.
But I think it was just a case of us, like, yeah, being kind of, like, cheeky little kids, almost, like, because there's someone at our label who is, like, pretty good friends with them, like, hangs out with them on a fairly regular basis, and we were, like, constantly asking her, like, hey, has Mark said anything about us recently? Like, hey, like, can you say hi to Mark for us? And just, like, kind of, and I think, like, he was just kind of, like, when we asked him to sing on, like, there's so many parts on that record, though, that I was like, fuck, I can hear Mark's voice on this. Like, it would be perfect. Like, it would just be so perfect. Like, even though, like, we weren't, like, looking for guest spots. Like, it wasn't like we were trying to get people for guest spots, but because it was Mark Hoppus, we were like, oh, God, it would just be perfect.
Sure.
The whole, like, December 2, having two people on December was actually, like, almost, like, that idea kind of came from label. Like,
right, because, hey, you guys have, just so both. People know that don't know, you had an acoustic version with which Chris Carrabba did a feature on, and then a rock version which had Mark Hoppus, right?
Yeah. And there's two separate videos, but they kind of, like, lead on to each other, and it's this whole story and shit. Like, yeah, great idea. Like, work well. Kind of confusing. Personally, I think it's kind of confusing, but I think it worked well, and kids like really liked it.
I think it's a cool idea.
But
yeah,
it was kind of a label idea, and yeah, I was surprised that Chris Caraba wanted to do it as well. Like, he was, again, when, like I said before, like playing like acoustic shows and acoustic music, like Dashboard Confessional, him, Dashboard, and City and Color. Like, that was like all I listened to for probably good two years,
good 2 years straight.
I was big into my acoustic-y kind of folky shit. And yeah, like Dashboard was a huge influence. And Even back in the day, like Dashboard was a huge influence as well. Like I remember my brother like real deep into his emo phase, like real big on the MySpace times, like, constantly. It was Dashboard. Dashboard was, you know, he was the songbird for that little period of time, I think, and really did like kind of captured like not the vibe of a scene, like almost captured like an attitude kind of thing, you know, that sad boy kind of attitude. And it worked really well. So
absolutely,
yeah, on that song it was great.
And with Jeremy McKinnon, you know, vocalist of A Day to Remember, obviously, how did you get in touch with him and Andrew Wade? And you guys made the last record with him. Are you going to work with them again?
Yeah. Well, for once, it wasn't us pestering someone. So like, he actually like fucking came to us and was like, well, basically, we were meant to just be doing the record with just Andrew Wade. Like,
yeah.
And he kind of hijacked it and was like, because him and Wade are best friends. And so he was just like, I'm working on this now too. Like, I don't care. I'm doing it. Like, so when Phil went to meet with Wade in Florida, Jeremy was there and was like, you have to let me do this. Like, please. Like, I'm so stoked. I know I can do something good with it. Like, and, you know, we'd met a few other people here and there, and we were kind of feeling it out. Like, who did we want to produce the record? And we just got the best vibes off Jeremy in terms of, like...
Absolutely.
Like, enthusiasm, and, like, I feel like he was the right person to kind of handle what we were doing at that stage in our career. Like, he knows what it's like to come from, you know, being a small band to being this huge band. You know, the progression of that band has been something that I guess, like, any band could look up to, especially any young band can look up to. Like, you know, their trajectory was crazy, but they also worked hard for what they had, so he knows what it's about. And he's written, you know, Days to Remember have got a fair few releases. I think they're on album 4 or 5 now, and so he's written albums before, you know, so we trusted him with it. And yeah, he was stoked on, he came to us, he was like super stoked on us, so that was refreshing, you know. And that was always a good thing to have someone so like keen to work with us, and not just us be like chasing people up, and it maybe be like, oh yeah, you're just another job to me, right, so I'll do it. But yeah, like, Jeremy gave a fuck. So.
Yeah, he doesn't produce records all the time. He's, you know,
no.
so it totally makes sense. And do you think you're going to go back to Andrew and Jeremy?
It's up in the air at the minute. We are currently at that point in deciding what we're going to do with this next record. We're kind of like, what do we do? I personally like loved working with Wade and Jeremy, and like, I don't know, like you said, Jeremy doesn't produce records all the time. I think whether Jeremy would do a third record, I don't even know, because he's put his stamp somewhere, and I don't think he's the type to like just kind of force himself on things and be like, well, I did the last record, so I must have to do this one. I think he was pretty happy with the last one, but I think Wade is up there. We're sticking with Wade as like our, at the minute, I think we want to go back to Wade.
You think he'll be involved? Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. At the minute, we think like we should go back to Wade. We're kind of looking around and seeing what's going on, but Wade is a genius. He is a fucking genius. He works so hard, man. And as a songwriter, producer, engineer, mixer, yeah. Ridiculously talented, so
awesome.
It would make, yeah, it'd be stupid not to, I think, but we'll see what happens.
Very cool. I gotta ask you about an incident the other night in Grand Rapids. I heard a girl ran on stage and tried to kiss you.
It wasn't a girl. That was a fully grown.
Oh, it was a dude.
Female woman. Yeah.
Oh, it was a female. Okay. It was a fully grown female.
Yeah, it was
woman.
A woman. Like, yeah, she. Yeah. It wasn't like the fact she tried to like kiss me. I mean, that is annoying in itself. Like, that is fucking annoying if someone would try to just kiss me. But it was more the fact that she like grabbed my face and to like pull me in. And like, it was just like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, that's what I said to her. Just like, what are you doing? Like, why are you here? Why are you here if that's what you think is like an acceptable thing to do? Like, just come up, grab my face and try to kiss me. How do you know that, like, I don't want to kiss you? You might want to kiss me, but I don't want to kiss you. Like,
yeah,
that is, like, you know what I mean? Technically, when it comes down to it, that is, like, some kind of sexual harassment, surely. Like,
yeah, sexual assault. Technically,
that's what it is. Get the fuck out of my grill. Like, how would you like it if a dude came up to you and grabbed your face in public and tried to kiss you? You'd be freaked out. Like, don't do it to me. Plus, as well, you're, like, a grown woman. I'm sure she looked like she could be someone's mom. It looked like she might have taken her kids to the show. Like, what?
So you think, you think she should have known better, I guess, is what you're saying.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, right. Absolutely. Like, yeah. And it was just kind of like, why? Like, it coming back to the whole trying to kind of be a bit low key and like keep myself to myself so that people,
right.
Is a lot of it is so that shit like that doesn't happen. It's so that people don't try and like idolize me and try and like, you know, put me on a pedestal and think that I'm this thing that they can just idolize and worship, and like, therefore they can do whatever they want and it justifies their weird behavior because it's, in their eyes, celebrity, you know what I mean? And celebrity is this weird commodity that society now has. It's like, celebrities are celebrities. They are there to be ogled at, they're to be kind of swooned over, they're to be, you know, they're almost these pieces of meat that we can just like kind of focus all of our desire and attention on. I don't want to fucking be that. Like, I don't want to be a fucking celebrity. I don't want to be, I don't want to be like ogled at, and I don't want to be like, I would like to be looked up to for what I do, for the art that I create and for the words that I put out, for the message that I put across, but not just because of, you know, dude in a band, like, fucking sick, like, so fucking cool, like, fucking, like, when people come up to me and say, like, oh, like, people that I knew, like, people from back home are like, oh, you're famous now. I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm like, I am not famous. Like, please don't tar me with that brush. Like, I don't know. And I'm just trying to escape that. And I think that, like, that shit that happened the other night, I think that's a product of, yeah, that fame, almost, like that, like, yeah, being put out there and people kind of putting you on a pedestal. It just, but it, for some reason, it makes people think that they can do whatever they want and that people are just going to be fine with it. Like, oh, I can go up and kiss that guy, he's going to be fine with it because he's in a band and it must happen to him all the time. Like, well, actually, no, it fucking doesn't happen to me all the time, and I don't like it when you do that, so please fucking don't do it. Like,
well, I appreciate that you're honest and that you're saying what you mean, because it's happened to me numerous times over the last, you know, 15 years where girls come up and kiss me on stage, and I always play it off like it's okay, and it's like, oh, it's cute or it's funny. And I don't know why I do that, because I don't feel that way. Like, I feel like that's not cool and I don't want you to kiss me. But for some reason, it's like this weird performer in me that wants to be cool and doesn't want to make it like a big deal. You know?
I
respect that you are like, you know what? Fuck off.
Yeah. I feel like it can be difficult to, yeah, especially if it was like, I don't know. I feel like the reason I reacted so much to this one as well, though, is because it was like a woman, like a grown woman. It's like, you should fucking know better. If it was a girl, I would have just moved my head out of the way and just ignored it and just kind of like carried on. But this time I was like, yo, like, actually, what the fuck are you doing? Like, fucking respect the fact that I'm a person and not a piece of meat. Like, give me some of my fucking personal space. Like, don't just grab my face and think that you can kiss me. Like, if it was like, you know, if it, and I don't think she was a genuine fan either. I think that she was probably just a drunk mom at the show. Like, if it was a genuine fan, I wouldn't want to like piss off a genuine fan. You know what I mean? Like, if they were a genuine fan of the band, I wouldn't want to be like, oh, here, I'm just about to embarrass you in front of 500 people. Like, I wouldn't want to do that. But it was like, yeah. And I think
I've tried to put that out like a bunch though of just like, hey, please respect the fact that I don't want to be some fucking dumbass cock star celebrity. Like, and I think people are starting to respect that now, at least with like, with me. Like, I know that people, most people wouldn't just assume that they can do that and get, and like, and that I'll think it's cool. Like, I'm not fucking Ronnie Radke. Like, I'm not fucking in Asking Alexandria. Like, I'm not a rock star. Like, please don't assume that I am one and therefore that I can just take and handle and do whatever the fuck I want. Like, nah. I'm a pretty, like, I'm pretty down to earth guy. Like, I have a girlfriend. I fucking, I'm from a very small town. Like, I still speak to my family and my friends every day. Like, I'm not fucking doing drugs and getting drunk every night and being a fuckhead. Like,
yep.
Yeah, I just don't want that. I don't know. I don't want that. I feel like that's just the quickest way to burn yourself out. So,
well, hey, I agree with you, and it's good that you guys are still young, but you still get it, and that you, I think you guys have a long career ahead of you and many great records. So it's great, dude. It's so good to talk to you. Thanks for taking the time. I know it's morning. I know you got a show. You got a show tonight?
Yeah, we're at the Emerson Theater in...
Oh, Indianapolis.
Indianapolis.
Oh, yeah. Boy. That's a shithole.
Really good. Cool. Sick.
No, that's a terrible venue, but it'll be... I'm sure it'll be packed out, and it'll be crazy, so...
Yeah, yeah. Most of them have, which is good. Like, it's good to go back to the roots and do these shows, so...
Absolutely, except when there's no barricade and women can just come slurp
apart
you.
From that, yeah. If you're an elder woman or a slightly older woman listening to the podcast, just because there isn't a barrier doesn't mean that you can get up on stage and kiss somebody 10 years younger than you.
Well, okay. So you're not into the older women, I guess.
Not all the women like that. No.
Oh, dude. Well, hey, man. Thank you again so much. Yeah, anything else to add? Anything else you want to plug?
We're, you know, after this tour, we're kind of laying low. We're going to be writing some new music. So, you know, if after this tour, we dip off the radar for a minute, we haven't died. We're not dead. We're not giving up. We're working on some new shit. So,
nice.
Just be patient with us after this. And, yeah, but other than that, just like if anyone's listening and is a big fan, just thank you for listening and supporting and believing in us, because... Couldn't do it without you, so there you go.
Hell yeah. Well, you're a very sweet guy. One last thing before I let you go. We always play music on this show, so I'd love to play a Neck Deep song. Okay. What one should we play for the people?
One of my personal favorites off the record, and one that I've really been enjoying playing live recently, is I Hope This Comes Back to Haunt You.
And what's this song about?
The song is about... It's got a dynamic to the song, because it starts off like real slow. It's quite a building, you know. It starts off just one single guitar, just this little pick ditty, and then it breaks into like this really rhythmic kind of bouncy chorus. And
yep.
It's really, but as far as lyrics go, it's a typical girl song. It's a song about a girl, you know. Sometimes that's all the song needs to be about, and. Yeah,
hell yeah,
it's just about a girl. It's about a girl, but then the ending is all about, it gives you this nice perspective on life, you know, afterwards, you know. It's got this real positive, big, almost crowdy ending. And yeah, if you're going through a shitty time, I think the end will help you out, and hopefully you can relate. But I just think it's a cool song.
Perfect. So. Well, hey, I've written lots of songs about girls, so I totally back it. Well, here it is, man.
All right.
I Hope This Comes Back to Haunt You by Neck Deep. On Lead Singer Syndrome. Thanks again, Ben, so much.
Yeah,
dude.
No worries.
All the best.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, dude.
I sat inside with a heavy heart. Just wish you would think of me. Are you listening? Ran round in circles till after dark. Didn't get very far. Wasn't meant to be. I never thought it would be this hard. It feels like you walked through me. I hope this comes back to haunt you. I hope this comes back to haunt you. And maybe you would know just how it felt to be like me at my lowest. As you let me out the door, you tore me open. day that's passing is surely mine to see.